Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Katie, I haven't seen you in a while.
I know. It feels like it's been forever.
I know. You've been traveling the world.
Yes.
Well, Orlando.
Yes.
Is that the world?
Well, it is. Epcot World Showcase. It is the world.
Right. So you're coming back from an exciting, a conference?
Yeah, an entrepreneurship
conference.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It was great. It was invigorating and exciting. It's fun.
Did they give you the certified entrepreneur?
No, still not there. Still not there.
Maybe next year. Now, yesterday, Stone and I were at the
ATDC. Yeah.
For a full day,
interviews,
a radio day.
All day. It was
we're
crazy.
Kicking off our relationship with ATDC, where we're interviewing all the entrepreneurs there and getting the word out about the good work they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great day. Did you listen to any of it?
I was not able to listen to any of it, but I was managing the social media and everybody was super excited. ATDC and everyone you interviewed, all the companies
there.
That's
right. I think we did about 14 interviews.
Yeah.
Good stuff. We'll be doing that every month now for the rest of the year.
Sweet. I'm excited.
But that was fun, but not as fun as today.
Yeah, of course.
Today we got a bunch of fun people.
Yes.
We're going to kick off the show with Katie Williams. She is with the Dunwoody Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you. Thank you for having us today.
Katie Williams with Dunwoody CVB. How are you doing? What are the exciting things happening in the world of Dunwoody?
Well, a lot's happening. It's fall, and so we always have a lot of great events and programs and conferences and people visiting. So it's a great time for Dunwoody. And this year we are launching the inaugural Dunwoody Arts and Culture Month. So
arts
we're excited
culture.
To talk about that.
So you combined arts and culture?
We did, yes.
Now, what does that look like in your mind?
Arts and culture are those organizations, events, happenings that I think highlight the artists, the people who are doing creative work, the events that offer new experiences, whether it be art or outdoors or performing arts, food, cuisine, all of that.
And so that's all under the umbrella of culture in your mind?
I think so. I mean, it's certainly a broad word. I think you can define it many different ways.
So now when you were thinking about putting this together, why October?
So October was, there's already a lot happening in Dunwoody during the month of October. You have events at the Dunwoody Nature Center. Every year it's Dunwoody Fine Arts Month the Dunwoody Fine Arts Association hosts Dunwoody Fine Arts Month during October.
Mm-hmm.
It's Atlanta Celebrates Photography Month. And so you have Sproul Gallery and the Dunwoody Nature Center both do photography exhibits as part of that celebration. And then on a national level, October is also the National Arts and Humanities Month. So October naturally seemed like a great fit to launch this new promotion.
And then what are some of the events that are going to happen during the month?
So this month we have, there's more than 30 events happening.
Wow.
So yeah, a lot. And that was already events that were already planned, already programmed for the month. And so we're just collectively promoting them. But this month at Sproul Gallery, there's a really beautiful photography exhibit called Greenside, which features photographs of Marines during a 2012 tour of Afghanistan. Beautiful photography exhibit. There's a lot of events happening at the Donaldson Bannister Farm. One's happening this weekend called Sunset Serenade, and that features classical music and wine tasting. A great combination. There's a comedy show this weekend at the Marcus Jewish Community Center. Some really great performing arts with stage door players. They've got a show going on. The Marcus Jewish Community Center has some children's events going on. The Nature Center has some events, and we have Alan Mothner here to talk about what's happening at their Nature Center.
All right, Alan, why don't you jump in here?
Sure.
Tell us about the Dunwoody Nature Center.
How much do you want to know?
I want to know all of it.
Wow. So we'll be here a few hours. Now, the Dunwoody Nature Center is a 22-acre park and cultural institution right in almost the middle of what many consider downtown Dunwoody. And so we've been working with Katie for years, but specifically this month, we're real excited to put the focus on culture and the arts in our community. Not only the Nature Center, but all these great nonprofit organizations that kind of are the heart and soul of the community, not necessarily the business, but the the things that people look for when they move to a community or go out in a community in the weekends or during the week for things to do. So at the Nature Center, we are doing several different events. As Katie mentioned, we have a photography exhibit that opens on October 24th with two photographers that have spent the past couple of years shooting in the park, one landscape and one birds. And they have some incredible photography that we'll have up in our new Northwoods Pavilion building, which just opened a couple months ago. And then we've got some more event type things. So we've got a Friday night hike coming up this Friday. We have a painting and Pinot wine class coming up on the 18th. We have a workshop in conjunction with the photography exhibit with David Rowan, who's one of the landscape photographer that put on the exhibition.
Now, at the Nature Center, can you give us kind of the lay of the land of what are some of the things that you would see if by going there?
Sure, yeah. You never quite know what you're going to see, as evidenced by the photographs that are on display. But we are a 22-acre park. We feature...
So is there streams? Is there waterfalls? Lions?
Depends how you define...
How much nature is there?
There's a decent amount of nature for a 50,000-person suburban city. There's a decent amount of nature there last night.
What'll surprise people?
We've got owls that come out at night that you might hear on the hike this Friday night. Mm-hmm. They were actually calling each other last night when I left a meeting around 7:30. Mm-hmm. We've got a beautiful creek called Wildcat Creek, which is accessible, which is one of the things we really try to promote is that experience. So you see kids and families and dogs, too. They get in there and walk around and turn over rocks and find salamanders or crawfish or water striders. So it's a really experiential park with lots to do.
And then how do you kind of get the artists involved? Are you looking for artists saying, come here and...
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is our third year of doing what we call Art in the Park, which is not the most creative name, but kind of fits.
It almost rhymes.
Yeah, almost. last year we did a project called Dunwoody Rocks, where we had the whole community involved, and we worked with the Sproul Art Center to do some painting workshops, and people painted rocks, and we created a trail in the park of those rocks, so you could come and see them and see what other people did, and that's actually still there. 2 years ago, we did a project called Who's in the Forest, and we worked with an artist out of South Carolina, Sally McInerney, and she created these creatures out of sticks and found debris things in the park that she could create the creatures of. So we had about 20 creatures throughout the park, and it was an election year, so we had a little ballot box there where you could vote for your favorite creature. And this year, we just happened upon Rudy and David, who were shooting in the park.
It was just random?
Yeah. Yeah. So Rudy is actually an Indian photographer. He was on here on assignment from Accenture, and his wife was here on a work visa. So he shot every day in the park for 6 months and just had these incredible pictures that we saw him posting online. So we talked to him about doing the photography exhibit. And David is this old school photographer with the 4x5 camera and the pullover cloth. And so we were obviously intrigued by that as well.
They needed somebody to take pictures of him taking pictures.
That's right. Yeah, we do the iPhone version of him with his medium format camera. So we just really happened upon both of them, and their work is just outstanding. We've got the prints framed and ready to go, and we'll be setting up that display in about a week.
And that's a great way to fundraise, too, I'm sure.
Of course. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, we... the idea of the Nature Center and the idea of that park is we want to have a little bit of something for everyone. So while photography or an art exhibit might not necessarily be the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the Dunwoody Nature Center, the idea is that this is a city park. We have a great relationship with our city and our parks department and our city council. And so we try to do these things for the community where they can come in and experience lots of different things in the park if nature or snakes aren't particularly your thing.
So now, Katie, how do you get kind of all of the constituents involved? You get the businesses, you get the government. How do you kind of match make here?
We wanted to bring everybody together and foster collaboration. And this being the first year, really the goal was just to get it off the ground and introduce the idea. But we're certainly hopeful that in years moving forward that we'll be able to bring together the restaurants and these nonprofit organizations and the business community. I think the Pinot and Picasso event happening at the Nature Center is a great example of that, because you're bringing a painting with a twist, which is a business in Dunwoody, to the nonprofit organization. Sunset Serenade that I mentioned earlier is partnering with a local restaurant, Novo Cucina, and to do the wine tasting at the Donaldson Bannister Farm. So this collaboration and the partnerships happening among our restaurants and the nonprofit organizations is so important for fostering culture and furthering these opportunities for our community.
Now, what's the mission of the Dunwoody CVB? Are you trying to get businesses to do events there? Like, what is your mission?
Our primary mission is to promote and market Dunwoody as a destination for tourism. And arts and culture is such an important part of that. It gives people a reason to visit and something to do while they're in your community. And so we felt like arts and culture, this type of promotion, fit within our mission. These organizations are really important to the fabric of our community and who we are and why people would come to our community, whether for leisure visitor, you know, as leisure tourism, or whether they're there on a business meeting or a conference. Places like the Nature Center give them a place to explore while they're in town.
Now, how do you define a tourist? Like, is that somebody from Decatur coming here?
So that's an interesting question. Again, can spark a lot
of
different.
You're not picking on Decatur, are you?
I'm pro Decatur.
We certainly welcome everybody. We typically do go after overnight visitors. So we do a lot of marketing in our drive markets, Birmingham, Chattanooga, like, right. Nashville, Greenville, Spartanburg, other parts of Georgia. People who are coming to Atlanta or would like to come to Atlanta and maybe are looking to stay outside the city and are familiar with Perimeter. Certainly Perimeter Mall is a big draw. Mm-hmm. And so we're giving them an opportunity to stay in Dunwoody and experience what we have, but also experience the rest of Atlanta, whether they're coming for a Braves game or something downtown. But again, we don't overlook the importance of having people from other parts of Metro Atlanta come into Dunwoody, spend money, which is a really important part of tourism
right.
and
I'm
economic
sure the restaurant
development.
People don't care.
That's right. That's right. It's all for the greater good of promoting tourism, economic development, and ultimately our organizations and restaurants and businesses.
So now the kind of the gravitational center of Dunwoody is that Dunwoody Village area. Is that correct?
You're opening a can of worms with that question.
Dunwoody Village has a lot of really wonderful businesses. It's home to so many of our local restaurants who have been there for many, many years.
But you do a lot of events there.
We do. Yeah, there's the Dunwoody Arts Festival actually is in the spring, is always in Dunwoody Village. And then we have Brook Run Park, but we certainly have Central Perimeter as well, which many people know. That's where our hotels are, many right. of the restaurants, Perimeter Mall again. So I think we have several wonderful hubs of our community that give people a variety of ways to experience Dunwoody.
And then, but when you're getting the word out about Dunwoody as a whole, like, is it that people get confused? Is there not clarity? Like, do they connect the dots that, you know, Perimeter Mall and Dunwoody Village are all part of the...
Well, that's what our marketing is trying to do, is to tell them and show them and hopefully have them experience that you can stay in Perimeter, you can be a part of the sub-market that is Central Perimeter,
right.
but also just 2 miles away, step into the Nature Center and right. feel like you're miles away.
Right. And is that a challenge for you, Alan?
No, that's great. I mean, the CVB does such a good job of drawing attention to all the different assets throughout the city. And we really have these distinct neighborhoods. You have, as Katie mentioned, you know, downtown Perimeter, if you will, which is almost like downtown Dunwoody. But then all these neighborhood nodes, the Village, Georgetown, Tilley Mill, all these great little areas that all have their own distinct character as well.
And then for you as a Nature Center, I think it's a great idea to lean on the arts. I mean, that it seems natural, though, because there's so much beauty there and that you would think that artists would want to come to a place like that and be inspired and do their work.
Exactly. And you hit the key word. That's our mission. Our mission is to inspire love of nature. So that gives us really a broad canvas to paint with, to use a really bad pun since we're talking about arts, to do different things in the park. So one of the things we did last year is we added a public piano. So there's a great nonprofit organization called Play Me Again Pianos. And we painted a old piano, the Sproul Art Center helped us with that. And it's painted in a nature theme and it resides in our meadow. And it's got a little cover over it, which an Eagle Scout designed and put up. And so you can be walking through the park in the middle of nature and hear
someone playing the piano.
I'll be honest, more often than not, it's like a 3-year-old banging.
Banging,
but
it still counts.
Every now and then you get a serenade, which is just great.
And then, but I think that's wonderful that you're leaning into the arts. And are you finding that artists are like, are you finding artists just kind of like you kind of randomly found a couple photographers, mm-hmm. like, are you finding artists kind of being drawn to this where they're coming out and saying, hey, I want to participate and how
Absolutely.
Can I get involved?
Yeah, we've had a really, well, for Arts and Culture Month in particular, we've had really wonderful feedback of people who want to be engaged and want to get involved. The primary participants this year are those nonprofit organizations like Sproul Center for the Arts, the Chattahoochee Hand Weavers Guild, which does really beautiful work and many people don't even know that they exist.
Right.
Stage Door Players, of course, is our performing arts center. And so we have this already existing organizations who are doing and offering really wonderful cultural offerings for our community. But I think this type of promotion brings people together and it just creates and fosters opportunities for collaboration.
Right. And there's people that are artists that, you know, you may not know. They could just be living in a neighborhood selling stuff online.
Right.
Right.
Right. Because it's not like where at one time you needed to go to a gallery to do this kind of work. Now anybody right. can do it in their house.
And as Katie mentioned, the whole idea of this Arts and Culture Month is to bring that focus on what the community is doing
right.
as a whole. So there's so many different chances to step out and meet other artists and participate in some of the events and, you know, really just hang with your neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Right. What a wonderful event. And then, again, if somebody wanted to learn more, I mean, you mentioned some of the activities. Is there other ones you want to talk about?
There's so many others. So you can go to DunwoodyACM.com, lists all of the events, and you can also check it out on Facebook. And we'll be highlighting the various organizations in order to raise awareness about what they're doing for arts and culture and the events that are happening.
Now, do you set a goal, like we're looking for a certain amount of attendance? Like, how do you measure, like, the success of an event like this?
Well, that's a great question. Certainly, we want to, we want this to be successful. Our primary goal this year was to raise awareness about these organizations and the events happening. Arts and culture is in Dunwoody, and I think so often it's easy to forget what's right in your backyard and
right.
what's happening here. And you go seeking it elsewhere. And we wanted to raise awareness, not only for our own community, but for the Metro Atlanta region, that Dunwoody has a really very great arts and culture community. We have a lot of events that are open to the public. And so we wanted to raise awareness about them. We certainly hope that we're driving more foot traffic to these events. That's
sure.
always the goal is, more people, higher attendance, more ticket sales. And then in the year's future, we hope that new events will be created that will bring new opportunities and just see where it goes.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having us.
All right. And one more time, the website for people who want to learn more.
DunwoodyACM.com.
Good stuff. Hang with us. Got one more guest. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have one of Atlanta's premier content strategist, Miss Emily Capps. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about content strategy.
Yes. Well, I was a copywriter for more than 20 years and naturally gravitated toward the front end content strategy piece.
What does that mean, front-end content strategy piece?
So you'll find a lot of content strategists have been writers before. And the reason why that is because they know how to edit things and they know how to put certain words and ideas and where would they go. And then if you know how to write and you have obviously a perspective on a tone of voice for a brand, then maybe you would be asked to do something like, oh, can you make a tone of voice document for the company or the business or whatever? And then should you ever go away, the next person can have it and they don't have it's like a document. And so those are sort of the front end documents that mm-hmm. I sort of just gravitated to, and I didn't even know I was doing content strategy for. But there's a point in my career when I was like, God, I don't know if I'm getting too old for this, and my ideas didn't feel like were selling. And so I talked to my friend Mason Poe, who's over at a really great shop called Edgar L. And I said, I've been hearing this thing called content strategy. And, oh, yeah, you got that, Joe. Yeah, it's really good. Tell great stories is the tagline. So he's like, okay. And he introduced me to a woman who was running a UX department over at a company.
That's user experience.
Yes, user
You're
experience.
Really talking all the
sorry.
Jargon.
I'm really sorry down, because Emily. I'm really anti-jargon. And so user experience is sort of a big deal these days. And what we were tasked to do was bring all of the company's brands, their websites responsive. So that means that they're mobile friendly. And this was sort of a gargantuan thing. And that is back-end content strategy, for the most part, the things that I was doing on the user experience team. So that meant building these giant spreadsheets that are called CMS maps.
You knew how to do that?
I know how to do that.
Wow.
And it was really weird because
both sides of your brain.
It is both sides of my brain. I never thought in a million years I'd actually like to do stuff like that.
You liked it too?
I love it.
Really?
And that's why if you go to my website, it's like a brain and a heart. And I like both. I really, truly like content strategy, the back end and the front end. But because I was born a writer. I love stories. My dad would tell stories. I just love stories. Like this guy recently, I was in a lane in traffic and he pulled over like he was speeding beside me and then slowed down to cuss me out. And I was like, okay, what's his story? You know, like it's all about stories. And even these detailed CMS maps that, you know, they seem very analytical, but actually they too have their own story. And it's a story that you give to the IT guys. And so at that point, I was like, oh, this is great. But then after about a year of working on the UX team and doing only back end, and usually I have like side projects and stuff to keep my gift going.
So you have to keep doing creative things.
Right. I really missed the creative piece. So I, 20 years ago, found 1,000 photos of this one woman's life in an antique store.
Just some stranger.
Some stranger.
Some random person.
Random. Like I walked up, I'm like, what's this? And there's two boxes of this lady and she's like in her bathing suit and she's with a bunch of girls and then they're overseas. And I was like, oh my God. And I realized that they're USO entertainers. And so I swooped up the box. It was only $100. This was before found photos were like, you know, they're like $5 a piece or whatever. So, and I never figured out what to do with them. I had a bunch of different ideas. So I go and I tell Mason, who plays sort of he's sort of like my creative director for life. I'm like, Mason, look at this stuff. I have this idea. And he's like, no, don't do that. This is an Instagram story. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah. And we sort of kind of worked out the parameters. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. It's a 1930s social media story. It's about a Jewish lesbian entertainer in the time of Hitler.
So you just made up a fictional story or you found research of who the real person
is? I knew enough about her to know that her name was Estelle Burke. She was from Rochester, New York, and there are a lot of Polish Jews settled there. So I knew she was Jewish because she changed her name from Esther Berkowitz to Estelle Burke. That I knew just by the photos, some of the things on that photos. And I knew about her personality because her vaudevillian boss, Art, said to my every day I quit secretary. Like, and so, you know, you figure these things out by just being with these photos for so long in the pinholes and what she blew up in a dark room and things like that. So essentially, I knew that she was a Jewish lesbian entertainer who lived in the time of Hitler, Stonewall, and vaudeville. So there's a hashtag strategy right there immediately. So the basic idea was that she is going to be posting these photos from her time to our time. So there's kind of like a parallel timeline, parallel universe, and maybe her photo album or her camera is perhaps magic. I didn't want it to get sci-fi, but as the reader in your reading, she's talking about her time.
Right.
And so it became really weird and interesting because when I was posting about Hitler's rise, and again, it's historical fiction. It's not straight fiction and it's not nonfiction. But while I was posting about Hitler's rise and kind of just pointing to these just in case anybody wanted to, I wanted to reach without preaching. So she would just touch on these things about how she was worried about her family.
So, were you following a timeline?
Yes.
Like from the '40s or late thirties?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So her first photo was in 1932.
Okay. So in the '30s, so you were looking at, okay, what happened on February 12th? And then you were going back to like history books to say, okay, this is what really happened. So that part is True.
Yes. In fact, when I first started, I had like a timeline and I...
So you drew out a map.
Drew out a timeline.
That side of your brain.
Yeah.
Probably liked that part.
Probably
right?
loved it. Yeah.
Writing out, because you had 1,000 photographs. So you were just putting kind of these little data points along this timeline to put all the 1,000 photos out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't put out all 1,000, but I picked out some of my favorites, but then saved some of my other favorites for later because I've always had in the back of my mind, I've always wanted to write a book and I had an idea for a book. So, but what I started was with just a couple photos. I didn't want to put all of them out there because some photos, you know, they're out of focus or whatever. So I started there and then
this is through Instagram.
Instagram. She's only on Instagram.
So you made an account for her, Estelle Burke.
The Estelle Burke.
So the Estelle, if I go to Instagram at the Estelle Burke, there's photos as if she was posting from the 30s.
And the whole idea is that you can binge scroll.
Right.
Which I invented that word. Okay. I'm just going to claim that right now. Or you can hit it micro story. So like when you look at the view, you see the thumbnail views. And her story is technically, now she's posting from heaven because she's died. And I had a celebration of life party for her in Little
and
Five Voices.
A celebration.
And, yes. There was a band. There was an open bar. It was fun. But so you have to like, if you want to do it from the beginning and do it like a story, you go to the very
first
beginning. Yeah. And it talks about, and you just follow it. And
it's all through photography or you have text as well?
So the image each has like a small story. Mm-hmm. And the idea about it being binge scroll is that you can follow the story as if you would, I don't know, Ozark or any of your favorite Netflix shows. Or you could follow it, like, if you don't want to take that time, you can look at the thumbnail views and say, oh, I like that picture of her with that cool, bikini and she's by a palm tree. What's that? And you click on it and it is, that's the picture and the image, the text and the image stand alone in and of themselves.
So this is some project. How long does this take? It seems like it would take a lot of...
Well, it's a labor of love. And I had to like set aside time for myself. Right. So every Monday, Wednesday and Friday, when I got home from work, I'd eat with my husband and say, see ya.
And it's Estelle time.
Yes. And that's how I devised, like, I kind of, my friend Mason knows me well enough because I'm very entrepreneurial at heart, and he had helped me or sort of came in the end of a project. It was a baby shower game that I can't really say the name of it because it's a little R-rated, but I had made all these games and I like put all this money into it and I didn't do like the other parts, like the business
parts. The math
parts. He's like,
it's the math part gets you every time.
I know. And he's like, Caps, I know you. Here are the parameters. And then he listed out the parameters. Like, okay, so you need to know this anyway, right? Because then that was the other thing too. It's like, am I too old for this? Am I irrelevant now? Like I'm in my late 40s.
You thought that.
Yeah, like I thought
part of me
was like, yeah, I was like, you know,
really?
Yeah, well, because I was at a shop before where I joined the UX team. And part of the reason why I started looking into the back end content strategy stuff, even though I was doing front end strategy, not even knowing it, was like my ideas weren't being picked. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, so I took it very personally and instead of like, well, maybe you're just not at the right place. But so I've always, I guess, totally incorrectly had this, the wrong idea that the older you are, the less creative you are. Cause you always hear about, oh, that band was great in the 80s, but they suck now. You know, I'm like, oh God, that's my fate. And, so Mason, thank God, he's like, hey, just do informal audience building and engagement exercises, learn from the data as you go, have fun. Don't get laser focused on perfection. Cause you know, I do. And then I like go, whew. And he's like, and I know Caps, no paid search, no ads, because I went so far with this other idea, this baby shower game that eventually got ripped off by a retailer, but I didn't see the profits. But anyway, so I developed a hashtag strategy, which, you know, you have your hashtag strategy is going to be Jewish life, gay and lesbian, entertainer, USO, vaudeville, dancer, historical fiction, found photos. And then from that hashtag strategy, a wonderful woman who has this amazing project called Save Family Photos found me and said, this is really great what you're doing. And will you write a guest blog post? So from that guest blog post, I think the increase was maybe 32%. And then I, you know, you do your research, you ask people, but people who liked the vintage fashion seem to gravitate toward the story way more than the USO people did, which I was really surprised. So it was vintage fashion pretty much and found photos. So I started going more in those directions. And then I asked a lot of my friends who I used to wear vintage fashions a lot more, but of my friends who still do, I said, who would be like the icon of this? And they all said Dita Von Teese. If you could get Dita Von Teese, that would be amazing. And I got Dita Von Teese.
Wow.
And I cried like a baby. I cried. I was like, oh my God, she's following. And I sent her these notes. I'm like, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I love her because she is really about like even championing the underdog. So,
and that's a great example of putting something out there, being mm-hmm. vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right. You had an idea, you put it out there, you behaved as if this was real and going to be thriving and you, let the market kind of talk to you and help you kind of guide it a little bit.
Yeah. And I learned a lot.
That doesn't sound like someone who is, you know, out of touch.
No, I mean, I'm not out of touch. It's just, you know, sometimes when you're in a lull, you kind of let your brain take you too far and then you have to pull yourself back and prove to yourself.
Feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah, no. Okay. No, but it was really good. And I mean, there's this part of me that's just like, of course I can do it. Absolutely. Of course. But then, you know, when, you know, sometimes that does matter, but so
that project kind of reinvigorated you.
It did. And it made me realize that I really wanted to do both content strategy, but back end work, but also creative work. And I'm at a point in my career where I'm like, I don't know where I want to land. Like, I don't know if I have to be just one or the other. I'm looking for
just interesting work,
places where I can be me. Like, I want to be paid to be me and whatever that means. It means that I know, you know,
even
a lot
if
of
it means
things.
Choosing yourself and making your own work.
Right. At least for a case study. But yeah, I mean, like through Dita Von Teese's follow, Ari Seth Cohen followed and he's with Advanced Style. And then Lydia 1940s followed. And when she followed, I got 113% growth overnight for a sell. And I was crying. Like I would put down the phone and then pick it back up to see how many more people had joined since putting the phone down. And my husband and I would like joke, how about 50? I was like, okay, I'm going to go for 70. And it was like 100 more.
Wow.
I'm like, oh my God. And I put it down like, okay, how many? It was magical and I loved it. It was beautiful. And, but the cool thing, the best thing I think for me as a creative and especially a writer was that people fell in love with her story. There were plenty of people who just liked the photos, but for the people and the other writers who were following, I had people binge scroll and then I could see that they were binge scrolling in the like section. So it'd take little movies of me scrolling up to see them. They had liked like a however many. And then I'd go to them and I say, thank you for liking Estelle. And then they would follow me. And then I thought, well, maybe I don't know what else should I do? So I was working at this company, as I mentioned, and they had a social media team. So my friend Kenny Monteith and Sunny Wasim, I had a little interview with them and I said, what else should I be doing? And they're like, oh my God, you need an author page. And it turned out to be fortuitous, that advice, because suddenly I realized that people were asking Estelle all these questions as Estelle Estelle couldn't answer. I mean, she kind of sees us, she's in her time and she's like, what are you talking about? And, but then she actually did have a discussion with a Chinese woman about seeing Marilyn Monroe in the theater and what it meant to her and who her, and she's like, don't tell me if she dies tragically. You know, it's just this really cool dialogue that you get to have with these fans of hers. And then now I have on my Instagram page more Estelle fans than I have like on my Facebook page of just my regular friends.
Now, did Estelle's family ever find you or did anybody recognize her at any point?
Well, no. This is kind of interesting, this research piece, because I only did... when I first found her, I was pissed off at her family. I'm like, who would do this? This is an amazing woman. I hate them. And so for a long time, for the vast majority of the time I've had her photos, I didn't even care about what what they had to say, because I felt very slighted for her. But my friend Lee Howard, who works at, I can't tell you where he works, but it's in DC and it's at a very big library.
Right.
He, we reconnected on Facebook. And he's like, oh my God, these author videos. Oh, and I started doing author videos, like, and I dressed up like in vintage clothes. And I was like, let's talk about Estelle. Cause her fans would ask me so many questions. I'm like, okay, you know what?
So now you're Estelle. Here.
So I'm the Estelle's custodian, and I am writing about her, and I'm answering questions from fans in video format.
And as if it's the '40s still?
Yeah. Well, I'm in the clothes, but I'm dressed in vintage clothes. So right. Yeah. But
that was for you.
That was for me. Right. And I thought it'd be cute. And I like dressing in vintage. I love vintage clothes. So my friend Lee was like, oh my God, he was asking me the questions about her family. And I said, look, Lee, I don't really know. The first time I got him was 20 years ago. Google wasn't even around then. And if you want to look, please feel free to look. And I was like, you know, but you got to be a researcher. And he's like, well, but I am a researcher. I said, oh, really? Where? And he told me, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, good.
You might be able to find it.
Yeah. And he was able to access USO records. He found photos of her in the USO archives that I had never seen. And he found out all kinds of information. And, there is a Rochester Historical Society that is talking to him about doing a paper on this find. And, you know, she lives on, even though she technically died again on Instagram.
And that somebody was just dumping their photos somewhere and you brought her back to life.
Well,
that's a gift you're giving them.
I like memento mori jewelry. So this sort of fits for me.
Well, good stuff. Well, that's a great story. Thank you so much for sharing it. Now, are you looking for work as a content strategist? You're looking for firms to hire you, agencies to work with? Like, what do you need?
I'm looking for people who, if anybody was out there to hear this and say, wow, that's something that I feel like she has the right skills, the combination of skills to help us, I would love to jump on a call. That would be great. I think.
What if I got a big box of photos?
Oh God!
Can you make a?
I would say good luck. I'd point you to later. It's a wonderful tool that you can schedule out your stuff.
You're not going to make this great story about.
No, I'm not going to do it again. I'm still not finished with the stuff. But I will say the I think the biggest feather in my cap engagement wise was I did get up to 19% engagement.
Wow!
So that's pretty huge.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks.
If somebody wanted to learn more, what's the website to learn more about Emily?
Well, I'm at emilycapps.com.
And that's two P's.
Two P's.
Emily, EmilyCapps.com.
Yes. Thank you, Lee. I appreciate it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.